To join the conference as the host, press star. Please enter your host password followed by the pound sign. There are 1 participants on the call, including you. You are joining your conference as the host. For a menu of available commands, press star pound.
Hello? Somebody already here? Wendy, is that you?
I didn't even look at this. Okay.
Are we confirmed that council members are online?
They should hear us. Council members on the conference call?
Hi, Desi here.
Councilmember Nichols, are you there? We have a quorum, so I'll go ahead and actually... Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. So welcome to the Grover Beach City Council meeting of Monday, March 16th. You will obviously notice that we have, for those of you in the audience, we have significantly fewer chairs. We are adhering to the governor's outline of having 10 we're saying 10 members of the public, 10 chairs in the audience. We do have other staff and so forth in the audience, but we are practicing social distancing. So with that, I will call the meeting to order, and I'll ask everyone to rise and give a moment of reflection for those who are battling COVID and those who are hopefully recovering, but then also those who we have lost. Thank you, everyone. So now we don't have a student leading our flag salute this evening, so I have asked our Deputy City Clerk, Nicole Ritena, if she would lead us in the flag salute, please.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very, very much for that. So. Before we do a roll call, I'm actually going to give both the city manager and the fire chief and the police chief, if he so chooses, a moment to kind of go over just a couple of differences this evening that you will see, one of which will actually get impacted by our roll call. So if the city manager, if you would be willing to provide a little update as to why we have 3 people at the dais, and we'll actually have 2 people joining us remotely.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. We do have a very unique time upon us at the moment. We do have an emergency meeting that has been scheduled at the conclusion of this meeting where we will be going into more details regarding our emergency situation. But just for the public's benefit at this time, we do have 2 members of the council who are joining us remotely, which has been authorized by Governor Newsom through a series of changes to the Brown Act enacted over the past week to allow for virtual electronic involvement and participation by members of a council or governing body. That is done in the interest of social distancing, particularly for individuals who may be feeling under the weather or who may be in higher risk categories. So we have 2 members of our council this evening that are taking that precaution and joining us remotely this evening. And for those who are in person, we are practicing the social distancing requirements as well, as the mayor mentioned earlier, both on the council dais as well as the staff table to the best of our ability, and then also in the audience as well. So this is a new world that we are adapting to as we speak, and we are doing our very best to model that and adhere to that here at Grover Beach.
Very good. Thank you for that. And actually, Mr. Lieberman, as the fire chief, if you wanted to say a couple words before we do a roll call as well.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Thank you. Steve Lieberman, Fire Chief, Five Cities Fire Authority. I would like to echo city manager's comments. We've been working diligently for the past 2 weeks, both from a public education campaign, letting the community know how to prepare for something like this, and then just working internally and staff with our regional partners to coordinate messaging and support the public health department. And as you can tell, by the events being presented in the news, things are starting to evolve here. So I applaud the community's efforts to enforce social distancing and to allow flexibility as allowed by the governor. I did want to give you a quick update focused on the county and then stay within the state of California. There's a lot of national news. So as you know, with the latest press release, we now have 3 diagnosed cases in the San Luis Obispo County. When this started and leading up to it, the county health agency set up their department operations center. It's known as CHADOC, and that's where the event was managed with the health officer as the incident commander until about Friday, when this was starting to get bigger than the resources within the health agency could handle. And as you know, with incidents and incident management systems in this county and this country, we have abilities to expand, so the County Emergency Operations Center was open to allow more resources to assist the health agency command and control and message and coordinate communications for this incident. State of California, I went to the California Department of Public Health website earlier today, and as of the 14th, here's some numbers for the community. Diagnosed cases in the state of California are 335. It's important to note that 24 of those were related to federal repatriation flights coming from cruise ships in China. So we'll say net 311 cases unique to the state of California. There's been 3 deaths, unfortunately. And of the 311, 70 of those cases are travel related. 68 are person-to-person contact. 82 are community acquisition, community-acquired infection. 91 of those cases are still under investigation by healthcare professionals. There's been a lot of messaging about flattening the curve. I'm sure everyone's heard it in the news or seen it on social media, and I believe it's a very relevant concept. And the point of flattening the curve, for those who haven't seen it, I'm sorry I don't have any visual aids, but by doing nothing, there will be a very sharp bell-shaped curve, an uptake of infection and people sick and needing medical resources, whereas we take these preventive actions, such as social distancing here in the council chambers tonight, we will kind of flatten down that bell-shaped curve. There will still be cases. People will still unfortunately get sick from this disease, but it will be over a prolonged period of time. The positive of that is it provides more access to healthcare facilities and resources than that sudden sharp spike where everything's in demand. So the concept of flattening the curve, whether it's here social distancing or not frequenting places where a lot of people tend to gather, earlier this afternoon, 6 Northern California counties have issued shelter-in-place orders for their communities. So it's a pretty drastic measure, but it's a warranted measure. And I just wanted to share that information with you to see if you had any questions and to share it with the community.
Very good. Thank you for that update. So any questions of the chief? Very good. Thank you. A moment for our next presentation is making itself known. But with that, we will go ahead and proceed into a roll call, please.
Councilmember Lance.
Here.
Councilmember Nichols. She's available. Councilmember Shaw?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Here.
Mayor Lee?
I am here as well. So we do have a quorum, and perhaps our IT gentleman, John, can help at some point maybe contact Councilmember Nichols to see if there's an issue on her end. So with that, we will go ahead and go into closed session announcements, where we do not have any closed session announcements this evening. That takes us to our agenda review. So at this time, is there any members of the council that want to make changes to the order of the day?
Not here.
Okay. Councilmember Lance?
No.
Very good. Okay. Councilmember Nichols, if you have joined us. Okay, so we'll, she has not been able to join us yet. So I am going to turn this over to our city manager because we have had a request to continue an item this evening, and I want to give the city manager an opportunity to express that.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. On our agenda this evening is a public hearing for a development project, 1806. The applicant of the project has contacted the city to request a continuance of this public hearing to a date certain of April 20th, 2020, in order to respond to issues and concerns raised by an attorney from the Homeowners Association neighboring the development site. So this is a request from the applicant to the city. Staff does concur with this continuance, and we do ask for the council's consideration of this request.
Very good. So specifically, that is items 8A and 8B, correct?
That's correct.
Very good. So with that request and concurrence from staff, is anyone ready to move the agenda?
I'll move the agenda as amended.
A second.
We have a motion and a second. We can do a roll call on this. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We will proceed as amended. So, gentlemen, thank you. So it looks like we have next a ceremonial calendar, which actually that item is a proclamation for the month of the child. However, that has been continued till April 6th as well. And so we will look forward to that proclamation and that ceremonial calendar at that time. But that does take us to a presentation where with all of the items and swirling around of the world, it does still move forward. And this is 2020, and we do have a census that is moving forward. And we do appreciate Kristen Erickson from San Luis Obispo County Administrative Department here to provide a presentation on the 2020 census.
Thank you. My name is Kristen Erickson. I'm with the County Administrative Office here to talk to you today about the 2020 census, which is still very important. Just give it a minute to come up here. Okay, so why is the census important? Why do we care about it? Nationwide, it determines our number of seats in the House of Representatives. About $675 billion in federal funding nationwide is based on the census and population counts. There's forecasting for our future transportation needs, which are pretty dependent on those numbers as well, and also housing assistance and rehabilitation loans. On our local county level, we're concerned about the $92.5 million in federal funding we got just last year. As well, we're going to be redistricting in 2021, and those districts will be largely based on the census population data as well. As an example of what can happen with a low count, it's thought that in 1990 we did have a low count in California. We lost one seat in the House and an estimated $2.2 billion statewide. There are some specific challenges to this particular census. One is that there is less federal funding for the U.S. Census Bureau's effort. At the same time, costs for what they need to do are higher. Because of that, they have decided to focus on online responses, which in some ways is a downside because it requires people to be proactive and get online and do it themselves. It also disadvantages those communities that have less access to online resources. However, given the current events lately, it may be a blessing in disguise that we're going to have fewer boots on the ground and more of an online push for response. There was a proposed citizenship question, super important to note and tell everyone you can that that question is no question about immigration status is included on the census. However, that question did put a lot of fear and doubt into some of our residents' minds, so we have to battle that as we get them to respond to the census. It's important to note that by law, individual responses to any of the census questions are protected for 72 years, even including to other federal agencies. And then, of course, in Slo County, we're actually a pretty good county as far as response history goes, but we do have some hard-to-count populations within our county. The state has recognized the challenges that we face, and they have put out an unprecedented $180 million to fund outreach efforts for the census. About $100,000 of that has come to Slo County. Again, good news, bad news. Good news is we respond pretty well historically. Bad news is we get less funding because of it. But we've been using that funding to focus on our hard count populations, and we've also seen the state giving additional funding to our community-based organizations countywide, as well as to our educational organizations, which is great. This is a map of our hard-to-count areas in the county. Only dark blue represents what they would consider a hard-to-count census tract. As you can see, we only have one that's dark blue, and it basically represents the campus and surrounding areas of Cal Poly. We think that that's because students are confused about whether...
I'm not hearing anything.
Okay. So we think that's because students are confused about whether they should respond and where, because often they respond to things to where they were registered to vote, which might be where their permanent address is with their parents.
Please hold on. Please hold on.
Yeah.
Please hold on.
Yeah.
Turn down the TV.
Hello? Hello?
Barbara, you need to turn your speakerphone off. That's all the feedback.
Okay, thank you. Can you hear me, John?
Yep, I hear you fine.
I can barely hear you.
Okay, Councilmember Nichols, this is Mayor Lee. Can you hear me? There's still an echo in
yes.
the background. Okay. So, and Barbara, if you could listen through your phone and not through your TV, that'd be much appreciated.
Thank you.
Very good. So let's, for the record, note that Councilmember Nichols has joined us. So, Ms. Erickson, please
sure.
continue.
Thank you. In addition to our student population in Cal Poly, there's one area there highlighted in orange. That is our second hardest to count census tract, and largely that is based on a higher population of people who do not have English language proficiency. Because of that, and we'll talk about this a little later, that is where we've centered our questionnaire assistance center, where we'll have assistance for answering the census both in English and Spanish in person. In order to tackle these challenges, we formed a slow complete count committee. There are representatives from all the cities, including this one. Local nonprofits and community-based organizations have been very active, as well as local agencies, including SLOCOG and the County Office of Education. And we've had county staff working on this as well. So what are we doing with our money? Well, we've got a marketing and outreach contract that we've developed with Verdin Marketing, and they are pushing out a pretty big digital marketing campaign right now. You may have seen on some of your social media pages some census ads. A lot of that is coming from us. We have also opened a questionnaire assistance center at the Paso Robles City Library. That's right near that census tract we just talked about earlier. Our plan as yet is to have it open through April 25th on Thursday and Friday afternoons and Saturday mornings. However, we also have to be mindful of all of the events surrounding this, and so we'll be reaching out to our public health director to see what she wants us to do moving forward. We've also been supplying tools for our partners, and our nonprofit partners are largely doing the smaller countywide events. They have already done several countywide, but again, this all may have impacts with the COVID-19 response, so we'll have to see how that plays out. We did supply toolkits for all of our partners, including the cities. So if you need more banners, please let us know. We're happy to provide them, posters as well, and fact sheets. And that's also gone out to our nonprofit partners so that they can reach out to the communities that they've been serving. And, of course, we've been having regular stakeholder council and board updates throughout this year, and I plan to go to the board again later this month. This is a sample of some of the things that our marketing contract has developed, some of the things you may see around town. A lot of this is going out digitally, so it'll be largely on social media or advertising online. We did that because there are two populations that we're concerned about, students who are constantly on social media and online, but also we're concerned about our homeless population. We don't have great data on how undercounted they are, but we're pretty certain that they have historically been and will be again. And surprisingly, they often have their phones out, and that's one of the best ways to reach that community. They will be counted through group enumeration, which is a little bit different than everyone else. They don't have to proactively respond. They'll be counted at places of service. But we want them to be aware of the census and to not be afraid of it. And then I have a video here, but I don't know how to click into it. Does that... Is there a way to play it? There we go. So you should be seeing videos like that coming out as well, just to draw attention and bring people to our landing page where we have a host of links and information for people to gain information about the census. A little more information about our questionnaire assistance center. Those are the hours. We also do currently have a phone line that operates during operating hours. That phone line does run through the library, so if we were to close the QAC, that number will likely change, and we'll probably change it to a county office phone number. So more to come on that, but we will be updating our website on all of our questionnaire assistance center activities going forward. And this is just kind of a timeline to let you know where we are and where we're going. Up till now, it's been a lot of planning, a lot of working with the state to make sure that we're doing what they want us to do. And we're kind of right now just heading into the initial response phase. Many of you may have received a postcard in the mail either this week or last week that's encouraging you to answer the census either on the phone or online with a unique code for your residence. Some of us have not received it yet, so if you haven't, don't panic. It still may come. Census Day, of course, is April 1st, but you can answer before if you've got your code. You can answer after as well, and we'll start our non-response follow-up phase after April 15th about, and that will include additional marketing and outreach, more about it's not too late, please still answer, and that you have until July 31st, and I think that's when the U.S. Census Bureau cuts it off and we're done with the count. And that's when also right before then when you'll get knocks on the door. So if you don't want someone to knock on your door, answer online or by the phone. And our next steps are we're going to take the census, and we hope all of you do too. We're going to hopefully continue some form of the questionnaire assistance center. Remains to be seen exactly how that will play out. We are going to work on our non-response follow-up contract with Verdin to beef up marketing and to target the audiences that we find through data are not responding. We'll probably know more about that later in the month. And then we'll continue to coordinate with our complete count committee, who have been very helpful on non-response follow-up as well. And that concludes my presentation. I'm available for questions.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation. Let's see if we have any questions from council members in the chambers first. So, Council Member Shaw.
No questions. Thank you for that informative presentation.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
No, very thorough. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Great. So, Council Member Lance, do you have any questions?
I do not. Thank you for the presentation.
Very good. Council Member Nichols.
I have no questions either, and thanks for the presentation.
You're welcome.
Very good. I do have one question for you. Just okay. I can't let you leave without a question.
That's fair.
So realizing that the North County has some hard to track folks, but South County may have some folks that don't have either access to internet and may not have be waiting for the non-response follow-up. So what kind of outreach partners are you working with? Obviously, the Five Cities Homeless Coalition might be one.
We are.
CAPSLO. So what?
Yeah, we're working closely with both of those groups. First Five to capture the families with young children who are often undercounted. We've been working with 40 Prado and their partners to try to make sure that the homeless population understands what's going to happen and the importance of them being a part of that. We've also been working with Central Coast Senior Citizens Commission, and so they've actually been doing a lot of outreach to that community, which is one of the ones we think may have a harder time with the online responses. But again, it is also, there's a phone line that they can call. So for those people who either don't have internet access or just simply aren't comfortable filling out an online form, they can answer by phone, and there are several language assistance numbers that have different languages. So there are more than one option.
Great. So there is multiple languages that people can
correct.
Can
and if you to. Go to the U.S. Census Bureau's website, they have several different phone numbers to call for various languages.
Great. Yeah. Very good. So thank you for that presentation. Yep. So with that, unless there's anything else you wanted to share?
Not at all. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
You too.
Great. So let's see. So that does complete our presentation calendar. And bear with me as I get back to our agenda. Because I believe this takes us into public communications, where during this time the council will listen to any members of the audience who want to speak on items that are not on the agenda this evening for a period of up to 3 minutes. Please note that while we will
leave
be able to listen to these items in accordance with the Brown Act. In accordance with the Brown Act, we will not be able to take any action on those items. So let's see if there's any members of the public that want to come forward and speak under public communication.
Good evening, council members. I was going to speak on something else this evening, but since I got noticed that item has been continued, and since I walked all the way down here, I might as well say something. The incident across the country that everybody is rallying all of their responses to, I think shows the importance that we need to treat issues that come across our desk, whether we foresee them or not. The housing issue that I was going to speak on tonight, I think, was going to be an example for that. It'll come to the council later on next month. There's going to be periodic instances as we address our housing issues that present themselves as opportunities and challenges. And I hope that when those opportunities come, we see the challenge and we take it for all that it's worth, and we do everything that we can, just like everybody's trying to move as much resources towards addressing the viral outbreak. I hope that as more housing projects come across our table, that we look at it and go, okay, what can we throw at this to make it the best that it can be, rather than just kind of running around like headless chickens and panicking. So I hope that you guys, as being in a position of leadership, would take more housing projects as they come along as opportunities and challenges and rise to the occasion. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments, Ms. Jeffries, and we'll see if anyone else has come in from the outside to participate under public communications. Seeing no one come forward, we'll go ahead and bring it back to the council for our next item, which is our consent agenda, where we do have five items this evening, so including a treasurer's report for the city, treasurer's report for the street bond account, 2017 street bond account, minutes of the March 2nd meeting, an update on the 2019 annual report on the status and progress and implementation of the general plan, and an adoption of the fiscal year 2021 council goals. Is there any member of the council that wants to have any questions on those items or wants to pull for separate consideration?
No.
Councilmember Shaw, is it no? Hold on 1 second, Councilmember Lance. Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
I just have a couple of questions on item 6, a comment on item 7, but nothing that requires pulling the item, I don't believe.
Okay, great. So then, Councilmember Lance, did you have any specific items that you wanted to ask questions of?
I just wanted to pull item 5 so I could abstain because I was not at last meeting.
Okay. Very good. Councilmember Nichols?
No, I have no objections to any of it.
Very good. Then we'll go back to Mayor Pro Tem Bright for questions on number 6.
Thank you. So on item 6, there was the population in 2019 decreased to lower than the population in 2016. I'm just wondering if there's any ideas why that might have happened.
So go ahead, and is Mr. Buckingham available for response to that question, or would that be more appropriate for you, Mr. Bronson?
I would defer to Mr. Buckingham anyway, so I'll ask Mr. Buckingham if he has an answer for that this evening.
Very good. Mr. Buckingham,
I apologize, I didn't hear the question.
Okay. So the population decreased, the most recent statistics, the population decreased to lower than the population in 2016. I mean, I have my own ideas, but I'm just wondering what the official, is there official?
It's likely to do with our vacancy rate and that the number of homes that are occupied by part-time residences increases as people are buying it for a second home. And so we have seen some minor fluctuations in years. That would be my best guess as to why we see.
You think the lack of stock, basically?
We're talking about the population number?
Yes. Lack of stock for people to...
Or the people, the home is taken off of the market because people own it as a second home or vacation rental. So it's not counted as
an occupied. So they don't actually live in it.
Correct. You have to live full-time in order to be counted in the population.
Well, that's better than what I was thinking. Okay, that's a better reason. All right, thank you.
Other questions on item six?
One last question. Just to confirm, so total to date of 14 low and zero, zero extremely and very low housing units. So there are no extremely and very low housing units that have been built to date. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So just 14 low and no extremely or very low housing units have
correct.
Been built
those
to date.
Those are less than 30% of the median income. The only way that housing is typically provided would be through a nonprofit developing affordable housing project.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood that correctly. Okay. Thank you very much.
Very good. So then I did just have one comment, perhaps question on item number six, Mr. Buckingham, as you continue to circle the room. So my question, and I apologize for not bringing it up earlier today for your being able to respond fully, but I did see you in going through the discussion that we have a PD overlay that is a situational opportunity for us with regards to development projects. So realizing that one that was going to be used this evening was an opportunity for that. I was wondering if you could just give a brief background on the opportunity for PD overlays in accordance with the general plan implementation.
So a plan development overlay is a fairly common planning tool that allows development projects to be granted exceptions to development standards, building height, lot coverage, and so forth, in return for basically a superior design project, which could vary depending on the type of project. But in the example of the project that was on the agenda tonight, sometimes if you cluster your development on a smaller part of the project, that reduces impacts because you're not grading as much or spreading the project out. But because you've concentrated the project in one area, then you might be higher or exceed some other kind of development standard. So it's a basic tool or reasoning behind the plan development overlay.
Very good. And it's been in our general plan implementation toolbox for a number of cycles, correct?
Probably 10 or 15 years.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for that. Any other questions on item number six? Very good. So was there questions on item number seven for Mr. Buckingham, or would it be more for Mr. Bronson?
No, it's just a comment.
Okay, very good. I do have a comment on number seven as well. So I will go ahead and put this out to the public, see if there's any members of the public that want to speak on items on the consent agenda. Seeing no one come forward, we'll go ahead and bring it back for comment on number seven. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Really, I just wanted to thank my colleagues for your thoughtful deliberation on the 2021 City Council goals, and I agree wholeheartedly with how you rearranged them, and thank you very much.
Very good. And that was going to be similar to my comment, as I do appreciate the input by the council members as well as the public last week when we went through our council goals. And I think we've got a good series of strong goals that we can move forward in for the next implementation years. So with that, City Manager, did you want to add something?
Yes, sir. Just a quick comment on that. I'll add my kudos to the council for your thoughtfulness and your deliberation at last week's goal-setting workshop. It seemed like a long time ago, given the events of the recent week. But that was an important conversation, an important outcome for the council. It really shows the evolution of the council's goal-setting process. You set goals that are 2 years in nature. You come back a year into it and recalibrate. You get the pulse of the community, in this case through the community survey and through other emergent priorities, and you make adjustments to reflect these goals in real time. And most notably, the council elevated housing and homelessness as one of the major city goals of this city, and combined those goals together into a single unitary goal reflecting the interconnectedness between housing and homelessness across our community. So that's a significant step for the council to take. I'm very pleased with the council's action that sends a very clear message to the community that housing homelessness is a top priority for this council and this city, and your staff will be looking at opportunities to execute this goal through the upcoming budget process and through our day-to-day implementation.
Well, and if I may, mm-hmm. A lot of thanks goes to the staff as well for their hard work to get us to a point where we're able to be able to combine these things, because their hard work got so many of the chores done that needed to be done. So really, it's thanks to the staff as well, because they did so much of the heavy lifting. So
that is a great comment. As the city manager presented last week of our major city goals last year, we had a success rate of approximately 80% either completed or will be completed before the end of this fiscal year, and that's a testament to the hard work and the focus of staff and the community towards accomplishing these goals.
Yep, absolutely.
Very good. So any other comments on item number 7?
No, Michelle? I just echo those comments, and it was great to see how much has been accomplished and how we're moving forward. So looking forward to seeing how the goals flesh out with the budget.
Very good. Yeah. Councilmember Lance, any other comments?
No, just echoing what everybody else has said already.
Very, very good. Councilmember Nichols?
The same. Grower Beaches, moving on up.
Very good. Thank you for that. So is someone prepared to make a motion on the consent agenda?
I'll make that motion that we accept the consent agenda as presented.
I'll second.
We do have a motion and a second. So looks like a roll call vote. And I understand, if I heard correctly, Councilmember Lance will be abstaining on item 5.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw.
Yes.
Councilmember Lance.
Yes, abstaining from item number 5.
Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Mayor Lee.
Yes. So we do have a passed consent agenda. So that does take us into item number 8. Our first item, public hearings 8A and 8B, have been continued per our agenda review. So that does take us to regular business items for this evening, which is item number 9 to start as a capital improvement program overview and direction. We'll start with the city manager, Mr. Bronson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. We're pleased to bring forward to you our draft capital improvement program for the next 5 years. This is an annual process that we've been working towards, where we share a preview of our CIP, we'll call it, in March to give you a glimpse of what we've envisioned for our capital program, which is major infrastructure projects that have a lifespan of multi-years or $50,000 in value. And around certain categories, streets, water systems, wastewater systems, facilities, to really make sure that we're moving in the right direction with our CIP prior to finalizing our budget process. So I'm pleased to have our staff team here this evening, our Public Works Director, Greg Ray, and then our Capital Improvement Program Manager, Aaron Wigan, who will lead the presentation this evening and share the very robust capital program that is proposed for next fiscal year, and then other projects that are lined up for the subsequent 4 years. So with that, I'll turn it over to Ms. Wigan.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Wigan. The floor is yours.
Okay. Mayor Lee, City Council, thank you. So we will be presenting our draft capital improvement program. We're presenting this to you for your review and direction here, and it identifies our projects and funding sources for the next 5 years, and of course it advances the projects related to your council goals and priorities. So I wanted to just kind of go through just quickly what we've accomplished the last fiscal year, or I guess this current fiscal year. The city completed the Mentone Basin improvements for the sports court areas and doing that flat work. We've started jumping into the Ramona Garden Park master plan and doing all of the community outreach for that plan. That will roll into the next fiscal year as well. And then I included a picture here to kind of show the before and after of the work that we did. We're in this room that we're sitting in. You can't see all the chairs that we have right now, but so that was a pretty big accomplishment for the city facilities. Perhaps one of the biggest projects, or actually one of the biggest projects that we completed, was the train station expansion project, the $3.1 million grant-funded project. And we are currently working on the upgrading the 2-inch and 4-inch water lines on the south side of the city right now. Then that work will be complete, weather permitting, first week in April. Moving on to our streets projects, we finished our Newport Avenue project. We also finished the Northwest streets, including portions of Atlantic City and Parkview and 1st and 2nd. And then we also completed South 16th Street. And we are currently working on our major streets design, which includes South Oak Park, North 4th, and West Grand Avenue. So moving on to our proposed capital improvement program here, we have 20 projects with a budget of about $10 million and 12 different funding sources here. And just reiterating, a lot of these projects will phase, you know, several fiscal years here. And this will be adopted as part of the budget later on this year. Going through, I'm just going to go quickly through the each category, and then I'll follow up with the fiscal section in a little bit here. But the parks projects, we have 16th Street Park improvements with playground equipment, you know, restroom rehabilitation, and then lighting. And then again, as I mentioned, we'll finish the Ramona Garden Park master plan next fiscal year. For public buildings and facilities, we have painting the exterior of City Hall, the Ramona Square parking lot, and then the Corporation Yard master plan. For water projects, we will be continuing with another CDBG project for more 2-inch and 4-inch water mains, and this will be throughout the city. And then we have another water main upgrade project for those water mains that aren't eligible for CDBG funding. I do want to point out we don't know if we will be successful for the CDBG project until probably May timeframe. And, of course, we have the Central Coast Blue design going on. Then moving on to wastewater, we have sewer upgrades to support, you know, future development. And the first phase next year is the Highland Sewer Project. And, of course, properties within 200 feet will be required to connect to the sewer. And then the Front Street lift station upgrades. So then moving on to the largest funded category here, your streets, we have two Measure K streets projects slated for next fiscal year, one of which the design is will be starting this year, and that's North and South 14th and North 8th Street and a portion of South 9th. And then the next project will follow our waterline work, and that will be on the south side with portions of Manhattan and Seabright. Then we have the sidewalk infill project, which is funded with Safe Routes to School grant. And then new, we have an annual street lighting project. We also have the major streets. So South Oak Park was selected as the first of the three major streets that we've designed to go to construction. And this project is funded with gas tax, local transportation funds, your SB1 funds, transportation development impact fees, and general funds, pretty much everything I could. So we are still looking at about $250,000 a budget difference to get that project going, so we're looking to close that as part of our budget development here. I just wanted to show this graphic, just showing you, you know, how big your streets are on this, all of your capital improvements. It's half of your CIP funds. Then closely followed by your waterline work, and then again wastewater, and then parks, and then public facilities.
So before you leave that slide, sure. I apologize. So okay. Just for those watching at home or in the audience here, can you just identify those by color, please?
Sure. So the gray is the streets project, your Metro K streets, major streets. The yellow is your waterline work, so that's $3.3 million. And then wastewater is dark blue, parks are light blue, and then our public facilities is orange.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Just wanting to look forward at the unfunded needs here. One big unfunded project that we have is what's called the disability access improvements, and that is we have an ADA transition plan, and that identifies everything that could be addressed for current ADA improvements. And to do all of those things would be about $20 million. But we're currently going to address those as we can each year and allocate funding for them. And for the next fiscal year, that will be allocated from the general fund. Your major streets rehabilitation, as I mentioned, we'll be moving through, doing South Oak Park, and we're working on designs of three of your major streets, but we still have the Pike, El Camino Real, and Farrell Avenue. The construction corporation yard construction, Ramona Garden Park improvements, as I mentioned, we have master plans for those, but we have not allocated or identified funding for actual construction improvements yet. Then West Grand Avenue enhancements and Central Coast Blue construction. So your total unfunded needs are about $73 million. So going through our fiscal impact section here, as I mentioned, we have all of the projects and 12 funding sources. And your general fund money will include upgrades to City Hall, so the painting, and then there's money allocated for the citywide disability access, so your ADA transition plan elements, and then the street lighting project, and then your major street maintenance, or essentially the South Oak Park Boulevard project. Your parks DIF, or development impact fees, will fund the 16th Street Park improvements and then the Ramona Garden Park master plan. And your transportation development impact fee is allocated towards the South Oak Park project. And then there is a trust account for the 16th Street Park improvements for the playground. LTF funds are about $526,000. This does include the Safe Routes to School grant funding, about $100,000. But there's some funding allocated for the Ramona Square parking lot rehab. And then you also have funding for your major streets. And just as an outline, you know, the local transportation funds can be used for transportation and major street maintenance and then pedestrian and traffic safety enhancements here. Gas tax funds. One thing I did want to point out is this is a large allocation of gas tax funds. We typically see gas tax funds of about 200,000, maybe 300,000. We had a balance, so we allocated, again, money to the major street maintenance program and then a cross gutter replacement project over on Nasamiano. Then your Measure K street funds are about $3.4 million. And again, that's North and South 14th, North 8th and South 9th, and then the south side after following the waterline work here. And then your water enterprise funds, this is about $1 million worth of water enterprise funds to do some water main upgrades as identified in the water master plan. And then the CDBG grant funded project is upgrading more 2-inch and 4-inch mains, and that's $2.4 million. And then the wastewater enterprise fund will fund portions of the Highland Sewer project and then the Front Street lift station upgrades. And then the wastewater development impact fee, the $600,000 will be allocated to the Highland Sewer project. So that was a lot of information all at once. So if you have any questions here, if you need me to go back.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation. That was a good synopsis of our capital improvement program, where we are, where we've been, and where we hope to go. So with that, I'll go ahead and turn it over to Councilmember Shaw, see if she has any questions.
Yeah, I just have a couple. On the Ramona Garden Park master plan, so I notice, you know, we're getting through the master plan, but then I don't see when will we carry out the plan, but would that be a different CIP?
So sure, that well, the Ramona Garden Park improvements are in the unfunded needs section currently. Right now, we've estimated it at about $3 million, but we'll have a better sense of costs and how to phase that project once we get the master plan.
Okay, so we'll hopefully be able to break it down and deliver parts.
And allocate funding as we can.
That's good. And then my other question was about the parking lots, that is CIP 3393. So I see in the coming year, we're going to possibly spend $180,000. Now, what is this $830,000 coming in 2022? Is that redoing the entire parking lot? Are we going to get paid back? Because some of that's privately owned.
I think, if I might, good evening, Council. Greg Ray, Public Works Director. The concept is to set up a assessment district to fund the reconstruction and then ongoing maintenance and landscaping of that entire parking lot. As you see right now, you see the design phase initially and then the city's portion of the construction phase coming in next year. The remainder would be the assessment district paid or funded portion of that. In setting up an assessment district, you do have to remember that the city would front the design, the legal component of setting up the district itself, and then going out to a vote on the district ultimately, assuming it would pass. If the district doesn't pass, that would be a risk that the city would take. And then ultimately would seek reimbursement for, you know, all but the city's portions of those costs in later years. So development impact, assessment district funded construction is that other $800,000 roughly.
Okay, so at least a portion of that we would be getting back at some
basically,
point.
Basically, our pro rata share of, or the pro rata share that would represent the private owned share of design, district, council, basically, and construction.
Okay, thank you. Those were all my questions.
Very good. So, Mayor Pro Tem Bright, do you
have thank questions? You. Yes, just one. The citywide disability access improvements, it seems to be the big number, and it looks like we're going to throw like $50,000 at it a year, basically. That's the plan?
That's correct. Okay. So the other thing with that, that ADA transition plan identifies everything in the city that could be updated. But keep in mind, we've already addressed a lot of things with the street project, you know, Newport Avenue, redoing all those curb ramps. So not only will we be allocating money each year, but all of our projects that we do, we address a lot of those components as well.
So then this $20 million figure, some of that $20 million is that also, would some of that money then be expended out of other funds?
It could be, yes.
Okay. So then this $50,000 that I see here, I mean, that's never going to touch this $20 million, right? So
correct.
So if we're talking like $4 million in, say, Measure K funds, could Measure K funds actually pay for some of these improvements?
So typically with the Measure K funds, we are required to do ADA improvements or curb ramps or bring the current curb ramps up to date. But obviously Measure K funds wouldn't address doors or things or facilities.
Sure, but I mean the ramps and that sort of thing. Okay, so then, because I was just thinking, I'm looking at this, you know, 50 a year. We're just, this $20 million is never going to.
So if I might comment on that, something to keep in mind that it is when you look at citywide disability access or impediments to access, the whole purpose of the ADA transition plan is to develop it's a long-range planning tool. That's the whole idea of it, and you basically develop a schedule and an annual cost of projects that project that over some 15, 20-year period that you'll ultimately have all those accessibility issues addressed. So that's kind of the whole point of it, is that it is a long-range outlook plan. So we're attacking it right now at roughly 50,000 plus other project money, like Measure K, as you mentioned, that's coming into it. So probably more to the tune of 150,000 a year, at least, if you look at all the handicap ramp, corner ramp work we're doing. So,
so you feel confident that we'll have it tackled?
I feel confident. We'll prioritize, you know, important issues such as accessibility here in the council chambers. We prioritize accessibility at your community centers is prioritized. And then ultimately, as required by law, accessibility at corner ramps and sidewalks related to street projects. And I am comfortable that we will meet the state requirement for having a plan in place with an adequate schedule.
Okay. Thank
you. And I just add that I'm confident that we'll make progress towards addressing our disability access needs. This is a new project for us. We haven't had this as an explicit capital project prior to now in recognition of the need we have and our ability to fund improvements to meet this need each and every year. Will we stick to $50,000 next year and, years beyond? That's the part of the process that will unfold. Maybe that number will be higher going forward based on specific projects that are going forward. We know what the need is, and we'll continue to refine that need. Maybe that number will change in the end, but this is designed to say we're going to make progress each and every year towards improving disability access across the community and to show what our results can be.
Thank you.
Very good. Any other questions?
That does it. Thank you.
Very good. Then we'll go ahead and go to our remote council members. Council Member Lance.
No questions at this time.
Very good. Council Member Nichols.
I have no questions.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for those questions. My questions were asked and answered, with the exception of one regarding the Ramona parking lot area. So perhaps the city manager could give the council an update on progress for the assessment district, where that stands. I know there's been communications over the course of several years, and there had been some progress, but depending upon where that progress stands, we could, as a council, determine where to prioritize the design funds based upon that progress. So, Mr. Bronson, if you could perhaps give a brief summary of where that effort is to date.
Sure, I'd be glad to. This is a project that has evolved quite a bit over a number of years. Just for the council's reference, the parking lot was set up back in the 70s and 80s through an assessment district in order to provide parking for the Ramona Square parking lot businesses. So that was set up almost 40 years ago and went through various iterations. The district essentially dissolved in the late 90s, and the city has been providing some very basic maintenance services since then. We own about 20% of the parking lot geography. The area right behind the post office is owned by the city. The rest of it is a privately owned parking lot. Back in 2017, we had some discussions at the direction of the council with property owners, and the vehicle at that point was a reimbursement agreement where the city would front the entire cost of the improvements, $800,000 roughly, and then get reimbursed by property owners since then, after that point. We have a preliminary design on the table that we were working on when we had some concerns raised by some of the property owners about their payment and the reimbursement mechanism. Would need each and every property owner to agree to that, to sign off on that. And also, our capital program has really exploded in size, in scope, in projects on streets, on sidewalks, on water facilities, and so this project was put on hold while we focus on other projects that are focused on our infrastructure. And then we're looking at a different vehicle now, the assessment district vehicle, similar to what was done back in 40 years ago, where the city would help take the effort of getting an assessment district off the ground through an engineer's estimate, through surveying property owners, and then there'd be a vote. And once the vote was passed, like Mr. Ray said, then the property owners must pay that amount, similar to votes for other measures. The city would pay its pro rata share. So we wouldn't front the cost. We would pay our portion of the costs, and then the private owners would pay the rest of it. That's where things stand now. And as it stands, our work plan shows this as something that would be begun next fiscal year. That's what our current project says, and this project for next year indicates that. We have $180,000 listed, which is the cost of our portion of the parking lot as a placeholder. I will say, talking to staff since the publication of the materials, as an alternative, what we could look at is having a smaller amount for the true cost of the assessment district formation, which is probably more like $50,000 for next fiscal year, with the idea that the construction would then take place in earnest fiscal year 21-22. That's probably a more realistic schedule based on the timing of getting a district off the ground and getting it formed, getting funding in place, and then the construction would really take place in 2022. What that means is that the $180,000 could probably drop down to $50,000 for next fiscal year, which would then free up $130,000 in LTF funds that could be redeployed for other needs that Ms. Wiegand articulated in the presentation. So I wanted to put that out there as an option for the council to consider. It still shows this work on our work program for next fiscal year. If the council still deemed this project part of our work program for next year, but it's more realistic and it allows us to deploy our LTF dollars most specifically for needs that we have next year, such as the South Oak Park project, where we have a project that's almost ready to go and some funding that we're trying to secure to make that happen. Sorry for the long answer on the question, but that's a narrative of where we've gone from, where we are now, and perhaps an option for the council to consider.
And no apologies necessary. I think that was a good summary and a good kind of iteration of what the funding is currently shown for and where we as a council could potentially go in our discussion. So any other questions of staff? If not, I'll go ahead and open it up to the public, but we have no public here this evening joining us anymore. So I will go ahead and close it to the public and bring it back for discussion. And ultimately, staff, you are looking this evening for any modifications, changes, updates to this program in advance of ultimate adoption as part of the 2020/21 mm-hmm. budget, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Mayor. While this is labeled a draft, this is a pretty far along working draft. And again, I want to take a moment and give a lot of kudos to our staff team across the room here, along with others such as Ms. Lynn Pearson for their tremendous work in putting this together. This is no small feat. Yeah. The numbers, the projects, the graphics. We also changed the format to have more pictures, make it more visually appealing. We have a little section at the bottom to tie it into council goals and priorities to give the council a sense of how we're reviewing these projects to help connect the dots. Everything that's shown as a project has a scope, has a resource, has a time commitment. The needs are out there, but the projects are defined for next fiscal year. And our team's done a great job in carrying out a program that will help move the city forward over this next year. So staff is looking for council input. If any of these projects, you have any questions or any further dialogue, if you'd like to tweak any of the amounts or any of the needs, we certainly are open to that. Otherwise, we will work this into the budget for next fiscal year, and you'll see a final version of this coming forward with the proposed budget in May.
Very good. Thank you for that backdrop. So let's go ahead and have any comments or discussion. So we'll start with Councilmember Shaw.
Yeah, thank you. My main comment, something I wanted to draw attention to, I really did like the new format of the report. I thought it was very readable, understandable, digestible, and in all of the completed projects, I was really impressed with the fact that almost all of them were under budget, very under budget. So I really want the public to look at that our staff is not only getting things done, but getting them done under budget. I think only one project, the train station, was slightly over, and one was on budget. So that's just really impressive. So I thank you for that. I liked the plan as written. Every time we've discussed this, so I'll just say it again, the Ramona parking lot is partly privately owned, and I think private people should pay their way. So if we can foster that, that's great. But I don't think we can start taking over for private entities. That's not what we should do as a government. And it sounds like we're moving in the right direction on that. I also just really appreciated the addition of sidewalks and streetlights being budgeted in here, because we can say we want sidewalks and we want streetlights, but until it makes it into a document like this, we're not going to see them. So I really appreciate that, the staff bringing that in. Also, just fixing the Nacimiento drain. I tend to think PG&E broke that, but whoever broke it, we need to have it fixed. And that, I will thank a resident for bringing that to our attention. And that area is tough for drainage. So I'm really glad to see that in here, too. So that those were all my comments.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Well, she said it all, she being Councilmember Shaw. I really don't have anything else to add. It looks great. It was so easy to read. I cannot compliment you enough on the new format. It's all right there. And it's just really so... anybody can read this and understand it. So I really don't have anything else to add. My only question, though, is regarding the street lighting, because we did talk about street lights, although I don't know that would actually be considered a CIP, because those funds were not CIP funds, I guessed, that we were going to be using, because we were going to do some street lighting this year and going into next year. So
actually, as you're commenting on that, maybe staff can confirm. So the monies in the CIP here are in addition to what was being proposed to be utilized by the end of this fiscal year for the prior streetlight program. This is in addition to that effort, correct?
That's correct. This is seen as a multi-year effort to add more streetlights to the city. That being said, we may not be able to fully expend the dollars earlier appropriated by the end of the fiscal year, given PG&E's time frame. But we have submitted the applications. We have had everything in place. They have cited a certain period of time for design and implementation. We're pushing them hard to achieve that before the end of the fiscal year. We may not be able to fully achieve that, but we'll work on it. This is an addition so that we can make progress each and every year.
Very good. So I just thank you for the document. It's marvelous.
Very good. Now we'll go out to our remote partners, Councilmember Lance.
Yes, thank you. I found the capital improvement program to be a very comprehensive document. I think that it's well-rounded as far as the projects that we're undertaking, both infrastructure and our parks. So I commend staff for the versatility of choosing the capital improvement projects, and I think it's a great reflection of what we're doing. So thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Nichols, anything to add?
Comments here, there really isn't much to add. I think we are on a fast track of doing things right and not rushing into anything without a sufficient funding, and we're doing things great.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. So I guess my only question for the council would be, did we want to direct staff to make the change to the Ramona Garden parking lot project, or do we want to leave it as is, and then potentially when projects come forward, say the South Oak Park, that may need funding, Do we want to leave it here for the moment and then possibly make the change at when South Oak Park comes down for bidding, or do you want to make the change now? Basically, going in the direction that Mr. Bronson mentioned with reducing the allocation to $50,000 and then potentially freeing up that remaining $130,000 for other projects.
Can we just review that one more time, please? The whole process. I do agree with Miriam. I really don't think that the city should. We're just part of the group. We're just one of the owners. So I don't know that we should be handling the whole deal. So would you mind just reiterating what you had said?
Sure.
Please?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Also, let me speak to the South Oak Park project and what staff intends to do in the final budget. So staff agrees with what I've heard from the council regarding the Rona Square parking lot. It is a largely private parking lot, and this project reflects that. This project just has costs that are associated with the city's share of that parking lot. One piece of information that I didn't mention earlier was the city resurfaced its portion of the parking lot about a year and a half ago now, I believe, and that has a lifespan of probably 3 to 5 years. So that portion does not need to be maintained again until a few years down the road. It's the rest of the parking lot that is privately owned that may need some more immediate repair work. So in our commitment, based on the council's prior direction and past councils, our plan would be to work on getting an assessment district off the ground in which the city would be a participant. We would get that formed by the end of next fiscal year in order to have a construction project the following fiscal year that would actually do the work. And we would contribute our portion, based on our percentage of the parking lot, roughly $180,000 in that work, not next year, but the year after that. So that's the proposal that staff has floated. It's based on the timing of getting an assessment district off the ground. Maybe the construction could start at the end of next fiscal year, but we have to get the district going first. On South Oak Park, let me just touch on this. Ms. Wagon identified a $250,000 funding gap, and that is indeed the case. However, my intent is that I would show a fully funded project in the final budget that you would be asked to approve in May. I would just have to use funds from reserves or other sources in order to fully fund that project. But your budget that you'll see will have a fully funded South Oak Park project, and then the bidding would reflect that funding appropriation next fiscal year. It's just a matter of where I get the funds from in order to close that gap.
And I guess that was kind of where my discussion was going. Do we effectively provide the city manager with funding from this project since the opportunity to advance the Ramona Garden parking lot is going to be less likely to be completed in the next fiscal year than I think we hope South Oak Park would be. So mm-hmm. That was just kind of my question for council direction.
Well, that makes sense to me.
Okay. Yeah, I think it makes sense to fund what we know we can actually do.
Okay. Absolutely.
Okay, so any remote comments, Councilmember Lance?
None.
Okay, Councilmember Nichols?
I was not present at the meeting when this was discussed. So where is this our parking lot intended to be?
So I'll answer that, and then staff can reiterate if I go astray. So, but it's the public parking lot, the private parking lot behind the post office. It's the component of the Ramona Square that Brad Ford and his property management firms control a good portion of those tenant-owned or tenant-occupied spaces. So it's. It's the parking lot between the city-owned parking lot that was refurbished in 2017 and Ramona Avenue. So it's that area. Does that clear up the location for you?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Okay. Very good. So any concerns with the direction that we've kind of outlaid for the city manager to basically effectively reduce the allocation for next fiscal year to $50,000 for the Ramona parking lot in order to do tasks necessary to get the assessment district and perhaps some design, and then redeploy that $130,000 into some other project as determined by staff, which at this point it appears to be South Oak Park, but...
I just had a clarification question. So the reason we would be putting off the Ramona or reallocating the Ramona funds is because we really couldn't get all of that done within that time frame anyway. Is that correct? Or is it just that we're kind of making a choice that South Oak Park needs to move ahead? I just want to make sure I know.
I would term it as a refinement of what we would do next fiscal year. I think the original proposal drafted by staff was getting the assessment district off the ground, finalizing the design, and beginning construction at the end of next fiscal year. But really, the bulk of construction would be the following fiscal year. And just given the time frame of getting a district off the ground, not to mention the time frame of a $10 million capital program with 20 projects that are also lined up, it's more realistic to think that this would be over the district would be over the course of the fiscal year, and then construction would be in the subsequent fiscal year. That would then free up $130,000 in transportation funds that could be put to use on our streets immediately next fiscal year.
All right. Well, then I agree. Let's do that.
Okay.
Yep, I agree.
Okay. So everybody clear on that direction? Councilmember Lance?
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Yes.
And Councilmember Shaw?
Yes.
Very good. So I realize this is a receive information and then provide direction to staff. Is there any other direction that council members want to provide to staff on the capital improvement program?
Not here.
Okay. Nope, none for me. Okay. Thank you.
Any remote questions?
No.
Very good. Does staff need any further refinement of direction, or do you feel comfortable?
We are comfortable, and we will finalize this and bring it back to you with the proposed budget in May.
Very good. Thank you for all your work, and thank you to Mr. Ray and Ms. Wiggins for your work on this program as well, and Ms. Pearson as well. So, with that, we will proceed into item number 10 this evening, which is an ordinance update and a second reading and possible adoption of proposed ordinance repealing and adding Section 2700 of Chapter 7 of Article 2, administration related to amending the process for publishing ordinances after passage. Looks like Mr. Hale and Mr. Bronson. Who wants to speak?
I guess I'll start.
Mr. Hale.
Good evening, Council. This is a house cleaning text amendment. Essentially, under the original Section 2700, that section required that at a time that an ordinance resolution was adopted, that it would be posted in three different places. City Hall would be one, the U.S. Post Office on Grand Avenue and 9th Street, and the Grover City Chamber of Commerce. That is not legally required under state statutes. That was a local zoning or local ordinance requirement. Under Government Code 36933, in fact, the only thing that we have to do is 15 days after the final passage of an ordinance, not necessarily a resolution, we're required to publish that in a newspaper of general circulation. We do have one, and I believe it's the New Times that we typically publish in. Therefore, if we follow typically just state law, that's all you have to do. So from an administrative burden perspective, this expedites the noticing requirements to the public, and it's less of a burden on the administration. So what this text amendment simply does is it repeals the original ordinance that we have, and it just replaces it with a requirement to publish ordinances in accordance with that particular code section. Now, if there are resolutions, and typically they're not required under state law to be posted, but in some cases, for instance, taxes can be adopted both by an ordinance and a resolution. If you adopt a tax by resolution, then you do have to post those, and it would be done in accordance with this code section. So typically, or this is just essentially a cleanup piece of legislation to meet state and be consistent with state law, but lessen the administrative burden on staff. So I'm available for any questions.
Very good. We'll see if we have any questions. Councilmember Shaw.
I just had one. Do we already publish on our website or somewhere online as well?
I believe we do, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
No questions.
Councilmember Lance.
No question.
Councilmember Nichols.
No question.
Very good. I just had one question, and again, I apologize that I did not ask this in advance. We do have a counter copy of all agendas prior to passage in this case, correct? So we would have a hard copy in City Hall prior to passage of this. So if someone did want to come in and take a look at the ordinance, it might not be the final adopted ordinance, but it would be the precursor to that.
Correct? I'll defer that to the clerk, but she's nodding her head yes, so I believe so.
Very good. Okay. And then with that, I don't have any other questions, and we don't have any members of the public, but I will go ahead, because it is a public hearing, or I guess this isn't a public hearing, but I will open it to the public for any comments or consideration of this. Seeing no one come forward, we'll go ahead and bring it back for council action.
Okay. Well, then, I'll make a motion that we conduct the second reading and adopt an ordinance to repeal and add Grover Beach Municipal Code Section 2700 to eliminate the posting of approved ordinances in three different places in the city and replace with the option to publish in a newspaper of general circulation.
We have a motion and a remote second. So that sounded like Councilmember Nichols. So any, very good. Any other discussion? Seeing no one, we'll go ahead and do a roll call, please. Madam Clerk.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols?
Yes.
Councilmember Lance?
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw?
Yes.
Mayor Lee?
Yes. And so that does conclude that item for this evening. So not having any public remaining in the chambers this evening, we won't go to public communications, but let's see if we have any council committee reports this evening. So we'll start Councilmember Nichols.
No council meetings whatsoever.
Very good. Councilmember Lance.
I just have a couple, only because I was gone last council meeting. I'll keep it brief. I attended the RAC meeting a couple weeks ago for Councilmember Nichols. The focus of the meeting was more geared towards state water and the happenings in that realm, which doesn't necessarily apply to us. I did attend a government affairs meeting hosted by the chamber, and the main purpose of that meeting was to focus on what our role is going to be moving forward. There's going to be an emphasis on potentially making recommendations to the board of South County Chambers, or not recommendations. So that's something that we'll look to do moving forward if there's a direct nexus to the business community. And then I also attended the ad hoc Central Coast Blue meeting last week. I anticipate that our joint meeting will be postponed, but it was a productive meeting. We're looking to plan to have that on a monthly basis just to maintain just kind of a touching point for each of the agencies that are involved of where the project is at. We're also going to use it as a conduit to potentially approve contract amendments, assuming the project moves forward. And so it'll be a good checks and balances, I think, to have that ad hoc committee. And that, I believe, is everything on my side.
Very good. Thank you for those updates. We'll go Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
I did not have any committee meetings. I supposed to have a Zone 3 this week, but last I heard before I left, that meeting was canceled. So I don't know. The main purpose was to adopt the budget, so we may do that via email. I'm not sure.
Very good. Councilmember Shaw.
I didn't have any meetings. We're going to have our first remote HSOC meeting on Wednesday, which I will get to run on a conference call. So interesting stuff. I do have a little update from League of Cities. We were doing conference calls every other day, basically with the listening in on the governor's people were briefing us every other day. But now it just seems like he's skipped directly to the almost daily press conference, so I haven't gotten many more notifications for calls. I think whatever is going on behind the scenes is out in front of the scenes, so just stay tuned to those press conferences from the governor, which are usually streamed live, and you're going to know the information in the same time we know it.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for that. And so I don't have any specific updates for my committee assignments, but I, in keeping with the governor's theme of putting as much information out in real time, the county is doing that same Facebook live updates, and there is now something that was just provided to me this evening was a Monday, Wednesday, Friday mayor's update by county staff in a conference call as well. So I understand the city manager will probably be invited to either that particular meeting or another similar meeting from while the updates of our COVID-19 situation continue. So with that, any council communications? So Councilmember Shaw.
I had a couple. One, I think we had been approached, I know Mayor Lee and I had been approached by someone wanting us to possibly consider doing an ordinance dealing with trucking oil across our counties, prohibiting that and possibly prohibiting new pipelines or pipelines that would be servicing oil rigs out in the ocean. Morro Bay and San Luis have already passed similar resolutions. So I wondered, I think we may have briefly brought it up and then we were thinking, well, maybe we should table this. Do you think it's something as time permits, maybe we should look at as a council?
So we'll go see if anyone has any concerns about agendizing that at an appropriate time. So Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Gee, I thought we did. Didn't we discuss this briefly?
I think so.
Before.
And if my memory serves, I think it was one of those topics where it was going to be brought back to us as time permits. And so I see the city manager moving forward. So I don't know if he recalls that conversation or had that on his back burner.
There was more than one climate change and fossil fuel related issue that had come up. There was at least one, it may have been this, where there was more information being sought from the stakeholders who were bringing this forward. We've had a number of other issues that we've been addressing over the last couple of months. So if this is something that the council would like to place on a future agenda, you could reaffirm past conversation or provide further direction tonight, and we could look at scheduling this at a future meeting, even with our fluid environment as we see today.
Okay. So is there any other information that
I think we should look at it, given that, you know, Morro Bay and Slo City have done it, and with us being one of the coastal cities, I can forward it to the city manager. There are already two resolutions drafted. So.
Very good.
Okay.
Councilmember Lance or Councilmember Nichols, any further discussion on that item?
No. No objection to that. None here.
Very good. So realizing, yes, as the city manager mentioned, we do have quite a fluid situation going on. I think we're reaffirming that conversation, but not expecting it to come back at the next meeting.
No, I don't think so. The only other communication I had is I was approached by a member of the community asking about trash pickup, because now we have many more family members home and we have some people are making more trash. And so she was just asking, do you think there's any chance they might waive the fee on like an extra bin or something? And I said, well, we're not really in charge of that, but I will raise it. So it's out there. I don't know, because there will be less pickups around businesses and schools. So just putting it out there. And just as a parent who completed their first day of homeschooling, I wish everyone in the city well. And some days will be better than others. And just everyone stand strong. It's going to be all right.
Very good. So Mayor Pro Tem Bright, any council communications?
Well, really just the one from Joe Hubble. And I guess that really has pretty much been resolved, because that really... the item about the butterfly grove is not in our jurisdiction. So that really, I think that's been taken care of. So that's about it for me.
Very good. Council Member Lance.
No, Council Community Communication.
Very good. Council Member Nichols.
None.
Okay. Very good. So I just had one council communication, and it is kind of one of those free-flowing, fluid situations in that we did have the mayor's meeting last Friday where we were able to hear a conversation from Dr. Penny Bornstein with regards to the COVID-19 updates. And pretty much everything she has said since Friday has been superseded and advanced at a quicker rate as we continue to move forward in this situation. So three items. One of the mayors, actually Steve Martin, I'll give credit towards coming up with a 3D slogan, shall we say, for this crisis, and one of which is distance. It's distance, disinfect, and diagnose. And so the distance is the social distancing as we've been discussing this evening, and we're practicing on the dais and in the chambers as well. And then disinfect, which is basically wash your hands and continue to wash surfaces and make sure that anything that you come in contact with is maintained in a cleanly fashion. And then diagnose, and that one is more along the lines of you as an individual are your best known understanding of how your body is reacting and what it feels and how you are feeling on any given moment. So with that, pay attention to your body, understand the diagnosis for the symptoms of COVID-19 and plan accordingly and reach out to readyslow.org. So www.readyslow.org for additional information on interacting with the public health system and or your doctor and some additional information that can be found there. So with that, no additional communications that I have. I'll turn it over to the city manager for anything that he wants to share.
Just two items that are not related to COVID-19, as we'll be spending some time on that in just a moment. One is that I attended a meeting of the Project Reach team. Project Reach is the successor to the Hourglass Project. They were planning their public unveiling today of their action plan that will take place at a later date. I can just say that it will be a very significant step forward in creating an even stronger regional economy and linking together the work we're doing on housing, infrastructure, and economic vitality. So stay tuned on that. But they've gone underground right now, rightly so, given the focus on COVID-19. So more to come on that front. And then I see our fire chief is back in the audience, and I will just... Oh, yes, sir?
I was going to say, and I apologize, before you leave the Reach 2030 initiative, I know that has some correlation to the housing summit as well that was potentially scheduled for April 3rd. Has that been officially postponed?
Not to my knowledge, but I think it is likely it will be postponed, but it has not been officially announced.
Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. So back to your comments.
And then just briefly, I see our fire chief's in the audience, and he can certainly speak more to this. The Oceana fire tax measure did fail very narrowly, 65.7%, I believe the final percentage was. It needed 66.6% to pass, so it was by just a very close margin. Considering that it pulled around 50% at the end of last year, that is a remarkable lift to where it is now. I've been in discussions with my fellow FCFA managers, along with the fire chief, to discuss scenarios going forward, and those will be further developed and discussed as we proceed forward. But to know that there is an earnest effort underway to discuss what happens going forward, and our city will continue to be part of those conversations to maintain a vital, strong fire and emergency medical service. And we see how important that is right now in the situations that we're facing.
Very good. Thank you for that. Chief, did you want to share anything else on that subject? I think he did as well, so we'll stand on that report and appreciate those comments and turn it over to the city attorney for any reports and comments. Very good. So we don't have any closed session this evening either, but before we do adjourn, we do have an item that will be coming up after this adjournment, which is a notice of an emergency meeting of the Grover Beach City Council. So unless there's any other business on the regular meeting, Seeing none, I'll go ahead and adjourn that meeting and see if we need 5 minutes, anybody? We will. Anybody on the remote end need a moment to proceed before we go to the special meeting?
No, I'm happy to proceed. No, I'm here.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and adjourn the first meeting and call to order the emergency meeting of Monday, March 16th, 2020 of the Grover Beach City Council, which was noticed this evening and was noticed for the completion of the regularly scheduled meeting. So with that, we'll do a roll call, please.
Councilmember Lance.
Here.
Councilmember Nichols.
Here.
Councilmember Shaw?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Here.
And Mayor Lee?
Here. So we will proceed as we do have a quorum. So I don't see any members of the public, but I will go ahead and open this up to see if anybody comes in, as any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item outside or not included in this agenda. Seeing no one come forward, we'll go ahead and close public communications and bring it back to the business item, which is the declaration of the existence of a local emergency within the city of Grover Beach. So, City Manager Bronson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council members. The Fire Chief earlier this evening provided a comprehensive look at what we are dealing with regards to COVID-19, the coronavirus. I won't repeat the information that the Chief mentioned, but just to acknowledge that it is a worldwide issue that we are addressing within our local community. It has impacts on a national level, state level, regional, county, and within our city. So just a little bit of background before the action before the Council this evening. One point I wanted to stress in the very beginning: the city of Grover Beach is addressing this public health situation in a calm, compassionate, and consistent manner while continuing to provide essential services to our community. This is a very fluid and ever-changing situation where information is coming fast and furious. We've taken a number of actions over the last 72 hours to respond to the situation. These actions include canceling our recreation programs and facility rentals over a two-week period beginning last Saturday. We've postponed large-scale city events over the next 2 weeks, including our State of the City event that was scheduled for March 23rd, consistent with our direction from the county and state. We've implemented social distancing requirements for meetings, as you've seen this evening, as well as within our city facilities as well. The FCFA, effective on Saturday, did close public access to their fire stations, meaning that walk-up visitors are requested to use the phone to contact individuals inside without going into the fire station. They also stopped their public education tours as part of their protocols. We have pushed out a number of messages on social media and our website over the last few days in order to help inform the community and inform the media on steps that we've taken. Also, I'll add that the County of San Luis Obispo, given its role, has taken action to issue an executive order earlier today that limited alcohol sales at on-site establishments, serving alcohol beginning at 5 p.m. this evening through 12 p.m. on Wednesday. And this was done in an abundance of caution, given the St. Patrick's Day holiday coming up, with the interest to help make sure that we are keeping crowds down. We're keeping people outside of bars, nightclubs, wineries, brew pubs, as dictated by our governor. This is a way to help ensure that takes place within our county. This is a county-wide order. It covers the entire county, including our jurisdiction, and we're authorized to enforce this should we come across violations of this. And we're working with the business community to help ensure there are no violations of this important executive order by the county. We've also been monitoring this closely in concert with our county and state officials. One thing that's really important for us as a city is to make sure we are in alignment with the county. This is a public health situation, first and foremost. And while we may have some responses that are unique to our city, the overall response is in alignment with the county and making sure that we are sharing consistent messages with our county partners who are working with our state partners. So that line of communication is very clear, and we are in constant communication with our county partners, with the fellow city managers, to make sure we are coordinated on this.
I'll also add, and the mayor can also add to this as well, that the Five Cities Homeless Coalition is working diligently to help house homeless individuals in the South County through a number of different strategies, including reopening the warming center at Life Point Church. They're also allowing for tent camping at the Oceano Campground, I believe. There are other strategies being employed, and the Five Cities Ministerial Association is also involved in helping to staff and provide volunteer assistance with this important effort to house our unsheltered individuals in this situation, particularly given the rain that we're experiencing. So those are actions that we've taken thus far. Now, additional actions that we are going to take as a city. Effective tomorrow, we are closing city facilities to in-person public access beginning 8 a.m. Tuesday, March 17th through the end of March. This covers the city hall facility, police station, community centers, and it's done out of an abundance of caution for the public and for our staff. I want to emphasize that we are open for business. We are just doing business electronically or over the phone. We'll still take information from our community. We'll respond to inquiries. We will receive digital plan submittals. We'll encourage people to use our online services. We just are not going to allow in-person walk-up public access out of an abundance of caution given the current situation with the virus. And this is consistent with other cities around the county. We'll also be waiving late fees, online convenience fees, and other related transaction fees during this period. We'll be extending our closure of recreation programs and facilities to the end of March to mirror this time frame as well. We're also holding virtual meetings instead of in-person meetings for meetings with outside groups here at City Hall and other city facilities. So we'll be mirroring what the state has been requesting. And I also want to stress that we're taking steps to support our employees during this time as well. It's really important for us to support our employee family through allowing them to work from home where applicable, to supporting them through sick leave and advancing sick leave usage. So we'll be working on ways to help support our employee family through this difficult time. Which gets us to the action before the council this evening, the local emergency declaration. As your emergency services director, I have the authority and power to declare a local emergency, and the council has the authority to ratify this within 7 days of declaration. And I've been working with other managers very diligently in considering this, and I have gone forward and enacted this earlier today. I've done so as a precautionary measure, as a step towards simplifying our city procedures in responding to this public health situation, and to enable reimbursement of costs as this goes forward, which is really a key opportunity for this disaster declaration, this emergency declaration, is as FEMA costs, as FEMA reimbursement is available, this enables the city to be recording our staff time, recording our costs to be able to apply for reimbursement. Similar declarations have been declared in Morro Bay and Pismo Beach, and will be considered tomorrow in San Luis Obispo. So again, we are working in concert as a countywide team. The council is asked to ratify this declaration this evening to enable us to continue responding in a prudent manner. This is, again, a precautionary measure to help us continue responding effectively across the community. We have not yet activated the Emergency Operations Center. We don't have a reason to do so at this time. If we feel we need to, we will, and we will take that step as well. Pending the council's action, we'll communicate this information on social media and our website. And lastly, I want to emphasize that we have a strong community, and we have a strong, capable, and committed organization dedicated to serving the community. And that will not change as part of this declaration. This is enabling tools and other procedures in place to help us make sure we continue responding to this situation in a very prudent manner. So with that, I'll take the council's questions and comments.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation and for that outline of how we got here, why we got here, and what some of the next steps are as well. So let's see, Councilmember Shaw, any questions?
It's a question comment. You touched on this a little bit, but I am worried about the situation with the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, because I did receive an email just saying they were closing the warming shelter, which I understand, and I'm not sure countywide if they're closing all of the shelters because people are so close together. But, you know, as much as we're worried about this virus, we could start having people you know, pass away from one night outside with the way it is right now. So I don't know if there's anything we need to do. Like you're saying, maybe we can get reimbursed by FEMA later, but some emergency boosts of funding to some of these organizations so they could just get people in hotel rooms at least until it stops raining or something like that. I don't know. Is there any talk of that?
And perhaps I can help with that. And I did talk with Supervisor Compton earlier today. She's now the elected official liaison from the county to the mayor's with regards to the subject, and we did approach that. And the county is advancing funds for some of the North County shelters and the San Luis shelters, and then also we'll be working with the coalition, Five Cities Coalition in the South County. And one of the first efforts it is in the North County is funding, and then one of the first efforts today for the South County has been the addition or the allowance of tent camping within county facilities on Highway 1. And so additional funding as it becomes available will be considered by the county as well. They are having an emergency declaration ratification special meeting tomorrow for the county level.
Okay.
And so I anticipate that could be a discussion point at that meeting as well. But there is already steps in place to do exactly what you're suggesting.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So, Mayor Pro Tem Bright, any questions?
Yes, please. We call an emergency. How does this end? Do we then at some time say that now this emergency situation ends? Is this finite, or how does that work?
That's a fair question, and I'm looking up the ordinance as part of that question. You know, I think in the short term, this is an evolving situation that will take some time to work through. This emergency is not one that will be rectified, per se, in the next 7 days, 14 days, next month. And these resolutions will be able to enable us to move forward in this manner possible. I don't believe that there's a date that's specified within the actual ordinance itself, looking at the city attorney.
I think the best way to define that is under 5301, it defines what constitutes an emergency. In the context of this particular virus, it's obviously an unknown. Could be over in a couple months. It could be substantially longer. So the declaration would stay in place to the extent or degree that that emergency is still considered as such, both by the local agency and I think the state of California. Can we put a specific date on it? Probably not for the reasons stated, but as long as there's a defined emergency in place, this resolution would be applicable.
So my question, I guess, then is, so then at some point in time when we determine, or it is determined that this emergency no longer exists, then we would rescind this, basically, is what we would do?
Yes. Okay. That would be rescinded by both my role as director and then ultimately ratified by the council,
okay,
just as the declaration is done so here.
Gotcha. I was just trying to get that straight, how all this works. Okay.
Very good. So it sounds like this is an action to declare the emergency. There will be an action to undeclare it, for lack of a better term, or terminate it.
That would be appropriate and logical to follow the declaration.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Councilmember Lance, any questions?
No questions. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Nichols?
No questions.
Okay. Very good. I guess I don't necessarily have a question here, I'll leave my questions or comments for, it'll be logistics, how we implement this and other actions. So I see no members of the public, but I'll see if either of our fire chiefs wanted to share any information on this emergency declaration before we consider it. Seeing neither one move forward, we'll go ahead and bring it back and close it to the public. And what's the council's consideration?
I'll move for the declaration of the existence of a local emergency.
looks like we would ratify that. Is that?
To ratify this declaration.
Okay, and I'll second that.
Okay. Very good. So we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Any discussion remotely?
No. Okay.
Very good. A roll call, please.
Councilmember Shaw?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Yes.
Councilmember Lance?
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols?
Councilmember Nichols?
Yes.
Mayor Lee?
Yes. So we have ratified the existence of the local emergency within the city of Grover Beach. So thank you for bringing that before us this evening and allowing the city to continue to operate, but to take the prudent steps needed to ensure we are doing what we can to protect the city and protect the assets of the city and to protect the ability to move forward with in a nimble fashion. So with that, I did have just one question, or you did mention that we will be closing City Hall to public access effective tomorrow morning. So anticipating that that may be some time before we reopen City Hall to that, our next council meeting is April 6th. So we'll get to continue to get updates either by the city manager or on the website with regards to whether that is going to be a fully virtual meeting or whether it becomes an in-person meeting with the possibility or the continued existence of social distancing. So any other logistics that we need to provide or share with the members of the listening audience?
I would just reiterate that the city of Grover Beach is committed and capable of addressing this situation in a very responsible manner. Our staff team is ready to address this, and we will be engaging and informing the council and the public on this process and these efforts as we go forward.
Very good. Appreciate that. And from a just from a messaging standpoint, on behalf of the city, I know all of us want to put out information either to our friends or neighbors or our social media feeds and so forth. But I know one of the elements that the city manager and I have discussed and hoping that it continues is we have been very consistent with our messaging. And so we've been very, as the city manager mentioned, calm in our approach. And very methodical in our approach, and I think as a community, our citizens and our businesses appreciate that, and so I'd like to commend all of us for remaining consistent in that message and being cognizant that staying calm and providing information is the best way for us to proceed and move forward with that. So unless there's any other comments or questions from council members, anybody remotely want to make any suggestions or comments?
No.
Very good. Then I will say thank you to staff and thank you to our fire chief and our police chief and all members of county staff or excuse me city staff as we move forward in this situation and continue the good work of the city, albeit from a safe social distance. With that, unless there's any other need for this emergency meeting, I will adjourn that and say be safe out there.